All right, so picture this. You're walking through a city plaza, maybe grabbing some lunch, and you look up at City Hall and you see the American flag, the state flag. But there's a third flagpole. And that, my friend, is where things get really interesting.
What's so fascinating about this is that for years, the city of Boston had a policy of letting private groups fly their flags. On this third pole, we're talking about a lot of flags, over 284 different ones.
Wow, 284. So everything from national flags to flags representing different communities, even the pride flag. Now, think about it for a second. Would you expect any limits on what kind of flags could be flown there?
That seemingly simple question leads us right into a First Amendment battle. It's the case of Shurtleff v. Boston, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court.
And at the center of it all, Harold Shurtleff in his request to fly a Christian flag on that pole, Boston said no way. And now we're not just talking flags, we're talking a constitutional showdown.
Exactly. This case really highlights the tension between free speech and government neutrality, especially when religion is involved.
So break this down for me. What exactly happened that led to this legal battle?
Well, like you said, Boston had this long-standing practice of letting groups use that third flagpole to fly their own flags. They had ceremonies and everything, and for years they approved every single request, never said no. But then, when Shurtleff, representing a group called Camp Constitution, applied to fly this Christian flag, the city suddenly said nope.
Interesting. And what was their reasoning for this sudden change?
They claimed it was all about the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. They were afraid that if they flew a Christian flag, it would look like the city was endorsing Christianity.
Hold on a sec. That seems kind of strange, right? They were okay with all these other flags from other countries, flags representing different communities, but a religious flag, that's where they draw the line.
That's what's so intriguing about this case. It raises the question, was this really about the Establishment Clause, or was there something else going on? Was it a case of viewpoint discrimination, as Shurtleff argued?
Okay, you've got my attention now. Tell me what happened next.
Yeah.
This couldn't have just ended with a handshake, right?
Definitely not. It went all the way to the Supreme Court, but first it had to go through the lower courts, both the District Court and the First Circuit Court of Appeals sided with the city of Boston. Their argument was that even though it was private groups using the flagpole, it was still considered government speech, so the city had the right to control the message.
Now, if I remember correctly, and my legal knowledge is a bit rusty, the Supreme Court doesn't always agree with the lower courts. Did they buy into this whole government speech idea?
You remember correctly, the Supreme Court took the case, and in a unanimous decision, all nine justices overturned the lower courts. They said Boston was wrong.
Okay, so this is where it gets good. Tell me, what were the big legal questions the Supreme Court had to answer?
There were two key questions. First, did this flag program really count as government speech? And second, if it wasn't government speech, did Boston denying Shurtleff's request mean they were discriminating against his viewpoint?
All right, so cut to the chase. What did the Supreme Court decide?
The court came down firmly on Shurtleff's side. They said it was not government speech, and yes, Boston did discriminate against his viewpoint.
That's a big ruling. Can you explain how they got there? What was their reasoning?
They used what they called a holistic inquiry to determine if this flag program was government speech. They looked at the big picture things like the history of flags, how the public would see these messages, and how much control the city actually had over the program.
So they weren't just looking at the flags themselves, but the whole context around them.
Exactly. And when you do that, a few things become clear. The historical argument was a bit shaky. Sure, flags are sometimes connected to government, but there's also a long history of them representing private expression, too.
And what about how the public saw it? Did the court think that people walking by City Hall would assume every flag represented the city's view?
They didn't really dive too deep into that part, but here's where things get really interesting. Remember how they approved hundreds of flags without ever saying no? Well, it turns out they didn't have any clear rules or criteria for which flags they would allow. They were basically approving everything without even looking.
Wait a minute. So they're saying this is government speech,
Yeah.
but they weren't acting like they were in control of the message at all.
You got it. And the court noticed that this lack of control over the content was a big problem for Boston. Justice Breyer, who wrote the majority opinion, even pointed out that they didn't even look at the designs of the flags before approving them.
Wow, that seems like a pretty big oversight if they were so worried about the message.
You would think so. The court basically said that because Boston had this hands-off approach, they couldn't turn around and claim it was government speech. It was private speech happening in a space provided by the government, and that created a public forum.
Okay, so that brings us to the second issue, viewpoint discrimination. This is really relevant for our listeners, right? Can you remind us what viewpoint discrimination is and how it played into the court's decision?
Absolutely. Viewpoint discrimination is when the government restricts speech based on the specific ideas or perspectives being expressed. And it's a huge no-no when it comes to the First Amendment. The government can't pick and choose which viewpoints get a platform, especially not in a public forum.
So in this case, the court was saying that because Boston created this public forum with the flagpole, they couldn't then exclude a flag just because they didn't like the religious message.
Exactly. And to make things even worse for Boston, they pretty much admitted that the religious nature of the flag was the only reason they said no. They even said during the oral arguments that if it had been a secular flag, maybe with a rainbow and the words Happy Pride, they would have approved it.
Yikes. That doesn't sound like a good legal strategy.
It wasn't by admitting they were making decisions based on the content. They basically handed the case to Shurtleff. The court made it very clear, once you create a public forum, you have to be viewpoint neutral. You can't allow some messages and then censor others just because you don't like them.
This makes sense, but didn't the court compare this case to another one about specialty license plates where the outcome was different? Mm-hmm. What was that all about?
You're thinking of Walker v. Texas, Sons of Confederate Veterans, and it is an interesting comparison in that case. The court decided that those specialty license plates were government speech because the state of Texas had a lot more control over what messages could be on them. They had specific rules about the designs, and they reviewed and approved every single one.
Ah, so in Walker, the government was acting like an editor, carefully choosing what was allowed. But in Shurtleff, Boston was just opening the doors and letting anyone say what they wanted.
That's a great way to put it. And that difference in control was key. It's what made those license plates government speech and what made the flagpole in Boston a public forum.
So practically, what does this really mean for other public forums? Could this affect things like school bulletin boards, public murals, or even permits for protests?
That's a really good question, and it's one that legal experts and government folks are still trying to figure out. The court didn't give us a clear rule for every situation, but they did give us some important guidance. Basically, yeah. They're saying that if the government wants to call something government speech, they can't just say it, they have to act like it. They need clear policies, real control over the content, and they can't make decisions based on someone's viewpoint.
So be careful, be consistent, and document everything, good advice, for anyone in government, not just for First Amendment issues.
Absolutely. And on the other side, if you're representing someone whose speech has been restricted in a public forum, Shurtleff gives you some strong arguments. The court is sending a message that government speech isn't a free pass for censorship. The government can't just use that label whenever they want. They have to prove they're controlling the message and that they really mean to send a specific message.
This has been so helpful in understanding this case. But before we move on, I want to bring it back to the core of the issue. This wasn't just about flags. It was about religious speech in public. What are the bigger implications of this decision for how we as a society think about religion and government, especially in a country that values both free expression and separation of church and state?
You've hit on a really important point. Shurtleff v. Boston isn't just a case about flags and flagpoles. It's about some much bigger questions, like what it means to live in a free society where people have different and sometimes opposing beliefs.
And like you said earlier, this case highlights the tension between two core values in the First Amendment, free speech, and no establishment of religion. It seems like finding the right balance between those two is always a challenge.
It's a delicate balance, for sure. On one hand, we want to make sure the government doesn't favor one religion over another or religion over non-religion, but we also don't want to end up in a situation where religious speech is treated like it's less important in the public square.
So how do we find that balance? What guidance does Shurtleff give to government officials, lawyers, and even everyday people who are trying to figure out this complicated issue?
I think the main takeaway is that neutrality is key. The government can't play favorites when it comes to speech, especially in a public forum. They can't create spaces for people to speak and then decide which viewpoints are okay based on what's being said or the speaker's religious beliefs.
So if a city opens up a space for public expression, they have to be ready to let everyone speak their mind, even if they don't agree with what's being said.
That's the idea. It's about creating a level playing field where everyone has a chance to be heard and where the best ideas, the most persuasive arguments, win out.
It sounds like Shurtleff is reminding us that the First Amendment isn't just about protecting the speech we like, but also the speech we might not like or even find offensive.
That's the great thing. And sometimes the hard thing about living in a free society, we have to be open to hearing different points of view, even those we strongly disagree with, because if we start censoring ideas we don't like, that's when things can get dangerous.
That's a good point to remember. Freedom of speech isn't just a nice idea. It's the foundation of a democracy.
Absolutely. It lets us question things, hold our leaders accountable, and have open and honest conversations about important issues. Without it, we lose our ability to govern ourselves, to learn from each other, and to grow as a society.
This has been a great deep dive into a case that at first glance might have just seemed like a fight about a flag, but as we've seen, it's about so much more. It touches on some really important principles of our democracy and makes us ask ourselves some tough questions about who we are as a society.
And I think that's the real value of looking at cases like Shirtlef. They make us think critically about what we believe, try to understand other people's perspectives, and appreciate the balance we need to keep our society free and open.
Well said. And to our listeners, we encourage you to keep this conversation going, to think about these issues, and to never take for granted the freedoms that let us have these discussions. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Until next time.
Right. And to make matters worse for Boston, they pretty much admitted that the only reason they said no was because it was a religious flag. They even said during the oral arguments that if it had been a secular flag, you know, maybe with a rainbow and the words happy pride, they would have been fine with it.
Ouch, that's gotta hurt.
It did, by admitting that their decision was based on the message they were basically handing the win to Shirtlef. The court was clear, once you create a public forum, you have to be viewpoint neutral. You can't allow some messages and then turn around and censor others just because you don't like them.
This is making sense, but the court compared this to a case about specialty license plates, and there the outcome was different. Can you remind us about that case and why it was different?
You're thinking of Walker v. Texas, Sons of Confederate Veterans, and it's a good comparison in that case. The court said those license plates were government speech because the state of Texas had way more control over what could go on them. They had specific rules about the designs, and they had to approve every single one. So in Walker, the government was being picky, like an editor, carefully choosing what was allowed. But in Shirtlef, Boston was basically like, come on in, everyone's welcome, say whatever you want.
That's a great way to put it. And that difference in control was the key. It's what made those license plates, government speech, and the flagpole a public forum.
So thinking practically, what does this mean for other public forums out there? Could this impact things like what can be put on school bulletin boards or public murals or even the permits needed for protests?
That's a good question, and it's one that legal experts and government folks are still figuring out. The court didn't give us a rule for every situation, but they gave some good guidance. Essentially, they're saying if the government wants to call something government speech, they can't just say it, they have to show it. They need clear policies, actual control over what's being said, and they can't make decisions based on someone's viewpoint.
So be careful, be consistent, and document everything. Good advice in general, right?
Absolutely. And on the flip side, if you're representing someone whose speech was shut down in a public forum, Shirtlef gives you some good arguments to use. The court is making it clear that the government speech idea isn't just a free pass to censor things. The government can't just use that label whenever they want. They have to prove they're really controlling the message and that they have a specific message they want to get across.
This has been super helpful in understanding this case, but before we wrap up, I want to go back to the heart of it all. This wasn't just about some flags on a pole. This was about religious speech in public.
Mm.
What does this decision mean for how we as a society think about the relationship between religion and government, especially in a country that values both free speech and keeping religion and government separate?
Yeah, you've hit on a very important point. Shirtlef v. Boston is about much bigger questions, like what it means to live in a free society where people have different, sometimes even completely opposite beliefs.
Yeah, and like you said before, this case shows us the tension between two big ideas in the First Amendment, freedom of speech and no government religion. It seems like finding the right balance between those two is always tough.
It is a delicate balance. On one hand, we want to make sure the government doesn't favor one religion over another or religion over no religion. But on the other hand, we don't want to create a situation where religious speech is treated as less important in public.
So how do we find that balance? What guidance does Shirtlef give to people and government lawyers and even regular folks trying to understand all of this?
I think the biggest lesson is that neutrality is key. The government can't have favorites when it comes to speech, especially in a public forum. They can't make a space for people to talk and then decide what's okay to say based on what they think or the speaker's religious beliefs.
So if a city decides to open up a space for public expression, they better be ready to let everyone have their say, even if they don't like what some people are saying.
That's the point. It's about giving everyone a fair chance to be heard and letting the best ideas, the strongest arguments, win out.
It sounds like Shirtlef reminds us that the First Amendment isn't just about protecting the speech we like, but also the speech we might not like or even find offensive.
That's the beauty and the hard part about living in a free society. We have to be open to hearing different viewpoints, even those we strongly disagree with, because when we start censoring ideas we don't like, that's a dangerous road.
That's a good point to remember. Freedom of speech isn't just some ideal. It's the foundation of a working democracy.
It gives us the power to question things, hold our leaders accountable, and have open and honest conversations about important issues. Without it, we can't govern ourselves, we can't learn from each other, and we can't grow as a society.
This has been a really great deep dive into a case that at first might have seemed like just a fight about a flag, but like we've learned, it's so much more. It's about some of the most important ideas in our democracy. It makes us ask some hard questions about who we are as a society.
And I think that's why cases like Shirtleff are so important. They make us think about what we believe, try to understand other people, and appreciate the balance we need for a free and open society.
Well said. Now to our listeners, we encourage you to keep thinking about this, to talk about it, and to never take for granted the freedoms we have that allow us to even have these conversations in the first place. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Until next time. Yeah, you're right to be interested in those concurrences. They get us a glimpse into how different justices think about these tricky First Amendment questions, like Justice Kavanaugh. He wrote a concurrence that focused on the lack of control as the most important factor in the case. He was basically saying if the government isn't shaping the message, it's not government speech.
So for him, it's all about whether the government is acting as a curator or a gatekeeper of the messages. If they're not deciding what's in and what's out, it's not their speech.
Exactly. For Justice Kavanaugh, it comes down to whether the government is purposely choosing which messages to promote and which to exclude. And in Boston's case, they weren't doing either. They were providing a platform and letting people speak, which made it a public forum in his view.
That sounds pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Did any of the other justices have a different take on it?
Justice Alito, you know him, he's big on religious freedom. He also wrote a concurrence, and he emphasized how important strict neutrality is in these public forums. He actually criticized the majority's holistic inquiry approach. He thought it gave the government too much leeway to kind of twist the government speech label to fit their own agenda.
So he's worried this multi-factor test could be used to shut out certain viewpoints that the government doesn't like. It's too subjective, too open to abuse.
That's a good way to put it. Justice Alito is concerned about a vague test that could let the government claim government speech whenever it's convenient for them, even when they're not really controlling the message. He wants a clearer rule, and for him, that rule is control, no government speech, plain and simple.
So both Kavanaugh and Alito are focused on control, but they're approaching it from different angles. Were there any other concurrences we should talk about?
Yes. Justice Gorsuch, who often agrees with Alito on these First Amendment issues, he also wrote his own concurrence. He really stressed that Boston's involvement in this whole flag program was just logistical. They were providing the space and some basic help, but they weren't trying to send any particular message themselves.
So he's pointing out how passive Boston was. They weren't creating messages. They weren't choosing content. They were basically just the landlords of the flagpole.
Exactly. And for Justice Gorsuch, that's a big deal. He argued that the majority's focus on history and public perception wasn't really important here. He wanted to focus on what the government actually did. And for him, their actions clearly show this was a public forum, not government speech.
It's fascinating how all these justices, even though they agreed on the outcome, had these subtle but important differences in their reasoning. What do you think this tells us about the future of the government speech idea? It seems like a really important concept for lawyers to understand.
It shows us that there's a growing debate within the court about how to balance the government's right to speak for itself with the public's right to free speech in public spaces. The majority opinion written by Justice Breyer is still rooted in the idea of looking at the big picture, considering the context, and trying to figure out what the government was trying to do. But then you have these other justices like Kavanaugh, Alito, and Gorsuch who want a stricter, more rule-based approach, focus only on control.
So it sounds like there's a kind of philosophical split happening within the court on this issue. Do you think this could impact other cases involving free speech in public forums, cases that could directly affect our listeners?
Definitely think about all the ways the government interacts with speech in public spaces. We have monuments and memorials, public art displays, funding for the arts, even things like social media accounts run by government agencies. All of these could bring up government speech questions, and how the court decides to apply this doctrine in the future will determine the answers.
That's a lot for lawyers and judges to consider. What are some of the key takeaways from this case, especially for legal professionals who might be advising clients on these issues? What should they keep in mind?
There are a few important things to remember. First, if you're part of a government entity and you're creating a program that involves private speech, Be really clear about what you're doing. If you want to say it's government speech, you have to back it up with your actions. Have clear written policies, have real control over the content, and don't make decisions based on viewpoint. Don't be like Boston in this case.
So be thoughtful, be consistent, and write everything down. Good advice for anyone working in government, not just for First Amendment stuff.
Exactly. And on the other hand, if you're representing someone whose speech was restricted in a public forum, Sheet Left gives you some strong points to argue. The court is saying the government can't just use the government speech idea to censor things. They have to show real control and prove that they have a specific message they want to get across.
This has been a really eye-opening discussion, but I think it's time to bring this deep dive to a close. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Well, this case might have seemed like a simple argument about a flag, but it really digs into some fundamental questions about free speech, religious freedom, and the role of government in our society. And it's a reminder that these issues are complex and constantly evolving.
Absolutely. So to our listeners, we encourage you to keep learning, keep questioning, and keep engaging in these important conversations. Thanks for joining us.
Until next time.